going to talk a little bit about some new stuff, but I'm also going to talk mostly about what I wish we had, what we don't have. And this is joint work with Alexis Massieu. So what I imagine theoretical computer science to be like in the 70s was basically two distinct fields. The people who were working in algorithms, like Dijkstra sitting there working away on clever ideas for algorithms, and then people working in hardcore lower bounds like Steve Cook thinking about these very hard space versus time problems. You know, I imagined, just based on the way computer science is taught, that these areas didn't really have a whole lot to do with each other. And in particular, the lower bound people thought that they were, you know, that what they were doing wasn't that relevant to the algorithms that people came up with. And then what happened,
and
I guess...
vice versa.
Pardon me?
And vice versa.
Vice versa is still the case, I think. And then what people happened is people over here got stuck, and they started to look to see what everybody else was doing. And then, in the next 25 years, what happened, I guess, was that we still can't really prove lower bounds at all, but now we recognize that there's lots of crossbreeding, and we're recognizing all sorts of fascinating connections between these areas. So these are actual eras. So there's these really great examples where lower bounds imply upper bounds, or upper bounds imply lower bounds. Wonderful connections with de-randomization, that lower bounds in complexity theory imply de-randomization and the other way around, and so on. You can view everything as a big coding theory problem. So we kind of have this much more complicated and interesting picture where everything's all related. And these are supposed to be flying pigs, and I wish I knew how to use PowerPoint, because then they'd really fly. But that's probably as likely as them actually flying.
Everything starts with cryptography. There's the source in the graph.
Okay, so that's really random.
Well,
it's not a source.
Yes, yes. Everywhere.
Okay. Maybe that's true. Actually, so the reason I have the pigs on here is I heard Avi Vickerson give a talk, I guess it was about 5 years ago, where he basically gave a whole talk on this subject, and he said, you know, we can't prove lower bounds, but basically what we're really good at, and the exciting developments, is about these if pigs could fly result, that under this assumption you can prove this, and so on. And so, you notice that proof complexity is not in this picture, and that's because I don't think the connection between proof complexity and all this other stuff isn't as known. It's not as spelled out. We think that there's all these connections, and there's some known, but there's really, in my view, we really don't understand very well how proofs of existence and proofs of certain statements really relate to complexity or to de-randomization. For example, exactly what hardness assumptions do you need to get Frege lower bounds? Do Frege bounds imply computational hardness? What role does randomness play? And there's two answers to these kind of questions. One is that the antecedent of the statement is always, you know, I mean, the implication is probably trivial because probably, you know, the left side is false, and so therefore the whole thing's true. But the question is, as Russell said in his talk, what can we actually prove without proving the lower bound? So that's sort of what I want to talk about today, although I have to warn you that I don't have anything major to say. So let's talk first about propositional logic. So if NP doesn't equal co-NP, then basically that assumption is enough to give us any superpolynomial lower bound that we want for any proof system. It's equivalent. But now the question is, what weaker assumptions can we make and still get lower bounds? And this is an example of a lot of really interesting results along these lines that we collectively have all proven. Using interpolation, you get really interesting results that monotone circuit bounds imply resolution bounds. Monotone real circuit lower bounds give cutting planes lower bounds. And more generally, if you have a proof system with feasible interpolation, then NP doesn't equal P/Pauli gives you lower bounds. And for tree-like systems, you get lower bounds using communication complexity assumptions. So in general in this talk I'm going to focus mostly on what results, what complexity assumptions, the minimal complexity assumptions give us the proof complexity results as opposed to the other direction. Not to say that the other direction isn't interesting, it is interesting, and I think as people pointed out earlier in this workshop, that the other direction is actually very interesting because proof complexity bounds rule out a large family of algorithms for solving SAT. And a notable example here is I think Nate will be talking a little bit more about this, but lower bounds for these Loewi-Shriver systems rule out interesting algorithms based on semi-definite programming for solving NP-hard problems, and you can even get inapproximability results for those kinds of algorithms using lower bound techniques from proof complexity. Okay, so what's the problem? Seems like we're moving along. Well, the problem is that all of these proof systems are quite weak. And all of these lower bounds, almost every lower bound I know of in proof complexity, with the exception of Itai's result, the argument relies on the hardness of some underlying search problem. And the search problem is usually very trivial to solve. So the real question that we're all trying to ask is, can we get a weaker assumption than NP not equal con P to prove a lower bound, such as a lower bound for bounded depth Frege or bounded depth Frege with mod gates? And what I mean here is we know how to prove lower bounds for bounded depth Frege, but we don't know how to do it just using hardness assumption of, say, AC0 circuits. We have to go through the whole switching lemma machinery to do that. Okay, so what about quantified propositional logic? This is, propositional logic where you have variables for the Boolean quantifiers. And now if you assume NP doesn't equal p-space, then again you can prove superpolynomial lower bounds for all the proof systems that you might care about, for all proof systems. And what goes on here? Well, in the uniform setting, there's a lot that's known. So the SI system is also called V1, V0. VI. These are the uniform versions of quantified propositional logic. And you can prove things like that the hierarchy that SI2 doesn't equal SI plus 1-2, assuming that the polynomial hierarchy doesn't collapse. So there are really nice results here. And again, though, they rely on similar kinds of search problems. They rely on witnessing theorems for the underlying proof system. And basically, I wanted to point out this intuition. In general, what we seem able to do is that if you have a statement that's more complex than the allowable kind of induction or cut, then we're usually able to make things work. So for example, here the statements to get lower bounds and negative results for SJ2, we usually use a sigma BI statement where I is bigger than J. Okay. And so one question that's a modest question is maybe we can do this kind of thing in a non-uniform setting as well. Okay, so I'll tell you about some very modest progress along these lines and then I'll spend some time on open questions. So what I want to show you today is this meta theorem that says that if it's modest, I warn you. So if you assume hardness for a particular Boolean function F using some non-uniform complexity class C, and I have to tell you what I mean by hardness, but it's a strong hardness assumption, then you can show lower bounds for a combinatorial principle that's relatively hard by itself, where you replace the variables, each variable gets replaced by a representation of the function f over disjoint variables. And then you can show lower bounds for that in a proof system that's allowed to cut on formulas from this complexity class C. And the star means it's tree-like. So I'll define all this formally, but that's the high level. People are very quiet. Okay, so you can get some corollaries of this. You can prove hardness of using hardness of parity function, which is known, You can get lower bounds for AC0 Frege. This has already been known, but we'll do it again. And you can show that if you assume a harmless enough assumption for mod, for any function, in particular mod 3, if you can show mod 3 is really hard for mod 2 bounded depth circuits, then you can get lower bounds for AC02 Frege lower bounds. And hardness higher up gives you a separation between the GI hierarchy. And I'll warn you now that the catch here is that these are not, for these propositional results, they're not CNF formulas. They're of higher complexity than what the proof system is allowed to cut on. Okay. So it's similar to something.
So does the first thing accomplish what you want to do, which is kind of modularize I-type?
No. So there's a big difference when you start with something that's a very low complexity and you're allowed to use cuts of much higher complexity. That's the big central problem that I have no idea how to solve. I wish I did. But what I'm pointing out is that if the complexity is the same or if the cut complexity is less than the formula, then you can usually use this search idea and you can usually directly come up. So this shows that in that case, you don't have to go through the lower bound machinery. You can just directly apply the hardness assumption to get the lower bound. Okay, and it's similar to something that Jan did ages ago. Before we had ITAI's lower bound for a pigeonhole principle, Jan looked at the pigeonhole principle applied to alternating and or circuits and proved that bounded depth Frege couldn't do that.
How do you express PHPF if you're... So I guess that's the point, is you need some higher complexity class
to
express
that? So if I'm talking about parity... So what this means is there's underlying block size B, and so you think of PHP as having meta variables PIJ, where I goes from 1 to n plus 1, and J goes from 1 to n, and now each of these gets replaced by a new parity, by a big parity formula on B new variables. So I'm going to add a K here, K going from 1 to B, and so this is a... This becomes a true formula of log depth or something.
But if you added like helper variables to make it to flatten it out, it would be hard.
Right. Maybe you can figure that one out.
Could you put this slide on the other project?
Yeah. Good.
Okay. So this is just to remind you what the proof system is. You don't have to pay a whole lot of attention to this, just to want to tell you exactly what I'm talking about. So I'm working in the usual secant calculus style proof system PK. So these are just the usual rules for and or not. So basically you have any number of underlying gates. You can have whichever ones you want. And I usually think about the fan. So in general, I want to think about the gates as being unbounded fan-ins. So here's particular rules for introducing and or on the left and the right. And here you can also allow a mod M connective. This is for mod 2, left and right. But you can decide what connectives you want and just have the introduction rule for the left and the right. And then, of course, we have the usual structural rules and the cut rule. That's the underlying system. And now, this definition is from Cook and Morioka. So if you have a family of sequence, gamma implies delta, and gamma and delta are sets of sequences of formulas, then P, which is a sequence of proofs, is a family of, this is the circuit class here. So you plug in some complexity, some non-uniform complexity class here. It's a family of this kind of proofs in PK. If basically they're proofs in PK and the cut is restricted to only, you're only allowed to cut on these kinds of formulas. So for AC0M, you're only allowed to cut on formulas that are bounded depth over and or not in mod M. And you can do this for any reasonable circuit class. And AC0 PK is you're only allowed to cut on bounded depth formulas over and or not. And we can... You don't need to, I don't need to keep any of this up, do I?
Yeah, but you have another projector.
This one's worse. Okay, so you can add to this to get quantified propositional proofs. You just add the exists and for all connective and rules to introduce them on the left and the right. And again, and now the sequence, again, are formulas, but now they're over this enlarged connective set. And they have a this family sequence has a family of proofs. Again, if each of these sequences has a proof in now quantified propositional logic, and now the cuts, and it's a sigma QI proof if the cuts are restricted to formulas in sigma QI. So the advantage of doing things this way is, number one, you can prove something, but also it's a natural analog of the bounded arithmetic system. So you can, you have arbitrary expressive power. You can talk about arbitrary quantified formula, arbitrary formulas, not just restricted to C and F. And you have a single unified proof system, the same way that Steve talked about, you know, a single view of bounded arithmetic. And the only thing you have to change is what the cuts, how you restrict the cuts. Okay. Okay, so these are the kind of hardest assumptions I mean. They're all the same type. So the first two are actually proven, and the other two aren't proven yet. Hopefully they will be at some point. So the first is Hostad's theorem, and it says that if you have a size, sub-exponential size, AC0 circuit of depth D, then it can't compute the parity function correctly on more than 1/2 plus 1 over that same exponential fraction of inputs. Okay, so it's not just the worst case hardness assumption, it's a much stronger assumption. But you can't compute parity correctly on, you know, slightly better than 1/2. And I'm making it as strong as possible to get the biggest lower bound, but you could just, it would be fine. You'd still get something if you said that C can't compute mod correctly, any circuit of polynomial size can't compute the mod function correctly on more than 1/2 plus 1 over poly n fraction of the inputs.
What sense do you speak of an assumption? This is a theorem.
Right, so that's a theorem. The second one is the analog of that for AC, basically for mod Q, for circuits where you add mod P gates, and now we're talking about the mod Q function, but here the same kind of result's not known. What's known, Razov-Smolensky showed that for computing mod 3, say, correctly, with bounded depth circuits with mod 2 gates, if the circuit has sub-exponential size, then it's going to err, it's not going to be correct on more than 1/2 plus little o of 1 of the inputs. And it's an open, really great open problem to improve this to 1/2 plus 1 over poly. That's the assumption that I need. I need at least 1/2 plus 1 over poly. So that's why the second one is a 2 prime, because I need the stronger hardness result. And then 3 is this very similar kind of conjecture for QBF formulas. So the IJ QBF hardness conjecture says that there's a function that has polynomial size formula with I alternations of quantifiers, but that any formula with J alternations, where J is less than I, of sub-exponential size can't be correct on very many, much more than just random guessing.
What kind of little O you have in theorem 2? Remember?
I don't remember. I think those, I don't know. Yeah. It's not 1 in N, that's for sure. Does anybody remember?
1 in a square.
Oh, is it that good? I know for sure it's 1 log N, but I think
it's like log the size of the...
A log to the size of the circuit? That's what I remembered. Okay, so those are the exact hardness assumptions, and these are the kinds of theorems that we can prove that if you have a bounded, if you have a PK proof where you're allowed to cut on AC0 circuits of depth D, then this principle, that's the pigeonhole principle where you place the variables by parity formulas with block, polynomial block size in N. So it's, when I write this, I mean the pigeonhole principle from N plus 1 to N. So little n is the number of holes, and big N is the total number of new variables. So big N is going to be N times N plus 1 times B. So big N is still going to be polynomial, but it's you know, substantially enlarged. So anyways, any formula of this type is going to require exponential size proofs, and that's not under any assumptions because of Hostet's theorem, and then the other two theorems, which are the analog for mod 2, 3, and the QBF things, are under these hardness assumptions. Okay, the proof is simple, so pretty simple. So I'll show you most of it. It's the usual kinds of things, except plugging in the hardness at the right place. So it's two lemmas. The first lemma says that you can take a proof of this type, and you can look at the underlying search problem associated with the proof. And then the second lemma is a lower bound for the search problem, assuming that you have this hardness assumption. So this lemma I'm not going to prove. It's simple. So if you have a size S bounded depth proof of anything, it doesn't have to be this pigeonhole parity, of any gamma implies delta, then there's a decision tree T, a size at most S, that solves the search problem for this. Okay, so what's the decision tree look like? Well, it depends what kind of cuts are allowed. The decision tree is allowed to cut on, it's a decision tree, and at every node is labeled with a formula in the underlying variables, and the leaves of the decision tree are labeled with either a formula in gamma that's made false or a formula in delta that's made true. So it's the witness. So you think about it as you're given an arbitrary truth assignment of the underlying variables, and you want to determine why gamma implies delta is true by either finding something on the left that's false or something on the right that's true. So it's the usual search problem that we think of as associated with the tautology. Okay, and if it's an AC0 proof, then the leaves can be labeled with internal nodes can be labeled with AC0 circuits. That corresponds to when you did a cut. Or they can be labeled with subformulas of a formula in gamma implies delta. And that corresponds to when you do one of the introduction rules. Okay, and it's important that you have this condition that if you have a path P in the tree, and if F prime is one of the subformulas of gamma implies delta, and F prime is a subformula of F, where they both occur as subformulas in gamma implies delta, then F appears before F prime in the tree. Does that make sense? So think about the proof in reverse, where you're starting here, the root corresponds to gamma implies delta, and you're applying cut and the introduction rules in reverse to go down toward the axioms. And this is basically saying that you can't, when you're breaking up one of the formulas in gamma or delta, you have to break up the whole thing before you start looking inside it. So on any path from the root to a leaf, if F prime is a subformula of F and gamma implies delta, F appears first followed by F prime. Okay, so you just proved, this is a simple proof by induction on the number of lines in the proof. Okay, and you just observe that if it's a cut, then you query the cut formula, and if it's an introduction rule, then you can query the corresponding subformula.
Do you first apply some normalization to the proof or anything? Because otherwise I don't see, so in an introduction rule you could also introduce something which is later cut out, so I don't see how why everything is either this or that.
Well, some things can be both. So you can be, so there are subformulas that happen to
so
be AC0.
You assume small cuts in the first place.
There are subformulas that can be both AC0D as well as subformulas. But they're one or the other. And you think of it as one or the other depending on what rule you used. So if you used an induction rule, then you're definitely a subformula of something in gamma or delta. And if you used cut, then you think of it as an AC0 formula. Did I answer your question? There's no normal form of needed.
So the formula we are proving is not AC0, right?
That's right. So that's very...
That's the catch.
I tried to point that out earlier. Yeah. The big catch is that we're proving something of higher complexity. The same way in the uniform setting we do the... That's the situation where we seem to be able to do things.
We don't really get a lot of outputs for school practices in the usual definition.
In the usual definition, no. You have to have a higher complex. People are laughing at that.
Don't sit here saying it's picking up on the microphone.
Oh, I see. Right. The hope is that you can start to fiddle with this thing the same way that you were able to eventually get a lower bound for depth D using depth D formulas. But the way I'm presenting it now, I think one should be able to do that without going through the switching lemma. Are you following me? So your lower bound, where you're actually in depth D, getting lower bounds for depth D, I think that if this could be improved to the DAG-like lower bound, you would get that. But the way I'm presenting it now, just to keep things simple, is I'm just assuming the formula is as big as possible. Okay, and then the second part is to show that if you have one of these decision trees for pigeonhole principle parity with that block size, then the tree has to be big, and therefore the proof had to be big. Okay.
What's the block size, Tony?
So I have the block size. What does it mean?
The definition.
Oh, so the definition is how large the parity functions are. So each Pij, which are the original variables of the pigeonhole principle, they're replaced by parity formulas, each one, and the number of underlying variables of the parity formula for each Pij is B.
I don't understand. So how is this PHP parity defined? Because you are using AC0 formulas, and then you say that you
the proof system is allowed to talk about arbitrary formulas.
Arbitrary, including parity.
Well, parity. So I want parity. Since I want to stay over and or not, I'm going to just write parity in the obvious way as a polynomial size formula over and or not. So it will
not of bounded depth.
That's right, not of bounded depth. Okay, so this formula Pij is a real formula. It's nowhere close to a 3CNF formula. Okay. I could have made it, you know, a different thing, not parity. Of depth D plus 1 if I wanted to be careful. But here's the basic idea. So you have this alleged proof, that's alleged decision tree that's of small size, and I'm going to prove a lower bound of the form 2 to the n, where little n's a number of holes. And this is the alleged decision tree, and I want to show it's big. So I start at the root. I'm going to show you the base case of the induction, and then the rest of it is you just have to carry along more information. It's a little more complicated, but this is the idea. So you start at the root here, and you follow the tree down as long as you're querying AC0. So as long as you're doing cuts in the original proof or querying AC0 formulas, you continue. Okay? And you stop whenever you hit a point that's either a leaf or where the formula queried at that node is not an AC0 formula. Okay, so this gives you a subtree T prime that's rooted at the real root of T. Okay, so either it's too big, in that case you're done. If it's of size 2 to the n, then you're done. And otherwise, it's a smaller size 2 to the n. And then we want to argue, then we want to find a particular leaf of T prime that's... So you think about all the truth, all the underlying truth assignments is flowing through the tree, and each leaf of this tree T prime has associated with it a disjoint set of all truth assignments. So you find the node at the leaf there that's consistent with the most truth assignments. So where the most truth assignments make it to that leaf, and call that corresponding set of truth assignments capital R. Okay? And since this is relatively small, T prime, this node X with corresponding truth assignments R has the property that R is pretty large. Okay? If the total number of original truth assignments, which is 2 to the n plus 1 n times v, divided by 2 to the n. Okay? Okay, and the whole point is just that we want to maintain. So as we're going down here, we want to maintain that you have 2 to the n plus 1 times n values to the meta variables, the PIJs. Okay? And we want to argue that this set R of assignments that's currently under consideration, that for each of these possible values to the meta variables, there's an assignment alpha that's consistent with this assignment in R. Okay, so in other words, you haven't really made any progress at all with respect to the pigeonhole principle. Okay. And as long as R is at least as big as this number, 2 to the n plus 1 nb minus b, you'll be guaranteed that you have this property, that for each of the truth assignments to each of the meta assignments to the PIJs, you have an assignment that's consistent with that. Does that make sense? Okay, so then we just want to argue that X can't be a leaf, and as long as we maintain this, X can't be a leaf, because if it was a leaf, it would have to be labeled, in this case, it would have to be labeled with either a clause that says that some pigeon I is left out, or a clause that says that two pigeons, I1 and I2, both go to some whole K. And if you have all possible if you can realize all possible assignments, there's no way you could know at this point which clause is violated, because all of them could still be violated. Okay? So that's why X can't be a leaf. Okay, so this means that we can continue. Since it's not a leaf, this means that X, which is not a leaf, has to query some PIJ. Okay? Because it's we stopped here. This was the AC0 part, and we stopped whenever all the queries were either leaves or subformulas of the original formula. Okay? And since they're subformulas of the original formula, it has to be a PIJ. And now this is where we use the hardness assumption. We look at we look at the query at that node X, some PIJ is queried. So on the one hand, PIJ is 1, on the other hand, it's 0. And now we use the fact that since, what is this path going to X? It's just the conjunction of a bunch of AC0 formulas. Okay? And the set of all truth assignments that satisfy that AC0 formula is large. So now we can use the assumption on parity to say that basically when we look at R, how it's split into two pieces, where PIJ is 1 and PIJ is 0, that splits R into two pieces, it has to split basically evenly, because this AC0 circuit can't distinguish at all PIJ 0 from PIJ 1, because PIJ is a parity formula. Okay. So that's exactly how we're using the hardness assumption. So I left that on so you could see exactly. So from Hostad's theorem, you get that if you have, so PIJ is a parity function, and R is a set of assignments that satisfy some AC0 V plus 1 circuit. This is the conjunction of all of this, all of the formulas on the path to X. And as long as, as long as the set of assignments is relatively big, when you look at what happens to R with respect to this parity function, that each of them has size roughly at least the size of R over 4. Okay. And so this means that we can, you know, we can go down both sides here, maintain that the new R at each of these two subtrees is still large, and continue inductively to show that each of these two subtrees has to have size 2n minus 1. Okay, and you can see that it doesn't really matter at all. The only thing that really matters in the argument is that is this essential fact that you're cutting on something that's of much weaker complexity than the formula, than this, the formula that's this PIJ formula. Okay. Now, when you continue inductively, there's some things you have to take care of. When you move down, now you can start to query subformulas of this PIJ. So we want to basically forget about PIJ from this point on. We already got our one. We already got our factor of two from this PIJ. So we want to basically clean things up and continue for the next step. So to clean things up, we're just going to think about setting on the side where PIJ is set to 1, we're going to think about all the assignments where I gets mapped to J and nothing else in its 1-to-1. So we're going to fix all of the PI. PI, K is always going to be set to 0 and K is not J. PI is going to be set to J. So we're going to clean it up in the usual way. Okay, so we're going to maintain here that we're talking about the pigeonhole principle on N minus N pigeons and N minus 1 holes, and everything else is sort of fixed. So when you apply this is just a detail, but when you apply the argument inductively, since we're doing this cleanup, you actually lose not just the factor of, you don't just get the original number minus 2, the 2 is coming from the size of R over 4, but you're getting 2 times N minus 1 because we're getting rid of a lot more variables than just the 1. Make sense? Okay. So that's basically it for the. That's all I have to say that's new, but I have a bunch of open questions. So what it would be really nice to is would be to improve this lower bound to the DAG case. It's a tree argument. I still think that it should be improved to the DAG case, and if it could, then I think you could really start to make progress on improving lower bounds for formulas of exactly the same complexity as the cut complexity.
Why?
Well, maybe we can talk about it offline. But basically, then you're just sort of the usual tricks where you look at something as a sequent, and now you just have one depth to deal with instead of all these depths. So another question I have, so when you apply this to the GI systems, you get the separation under the assumption that, so if you want to separate, say, G1 from G2, you get that separation under the assumption that there's, that SAT can't be solved, can't be approximated correctly by polynomial size circuits on more than 1/2 plus 1 in poly N in the inputs. And so my question is, how does this compare to the uniform results if you want to collapse the SI systems? If you want to show that SI is distinct from SI plus 1, you get that under the assumption that the poly hierarchy collapses. So I want to know how much stronger is it? I'm not saying this well. So knowing that SAT has poly-sized circuits implies the poly hierarchy collapses. Okay. Now I'm making the stronger assumption that not only does SAT not have poly-sized circuits, but it can't even be approximated by poly-sized circuits. And I want to know, how much stronger is that assumption? Can we prove that that implies the poly hierarchy collapse or something else surprising? As far as I know, that's not known. Okay, and then the rest of the questions have to do with if pigs can fly kinds of results. there's lots of interesting negative results on automatizability, and most of the interesting ones are under assumptions of one-way function existing. And I'd like to know if those assumptions can be proved to P not equal NP or SAT not in exponential time. Something weaker, presumably weaker, than the existence of one-way functions. The same way that...
You mean sub exponential time?
Seven. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, this should be... Thank you. And I think there's some hope that this is true and that it could be proven. But, so this is probably hard. Probably everybody here has thought about it a little bit. But again, the main limitation with all of this is that... We know how to reduce to circuit bounds when there's this when somehow there's the search problem that underlies the proof system. And for most proof systems, for CNF formulas, there's really no such thing going on. When you look at algebraic proof systems, the nice thing there is that you can look at the proof system over other values besides 0 and 1. So you, all of a sudden, you can be in a huge field, or an extension field even. And so it makes sense, I think, to talk about an approximate proof in that setting, because you can look at whether the polynomial is identically 0 over values other than 0, 1. So can we come up with some concept of approximate proof that makes sense in the algebraic setting? As far as I know, there's nothing known about Frege lower bounds, connections between lower bounds and proof complexity to de-randomization. There should be something, because if you have a hard function, then you can de-randomize, and a Frege lower bound rules out a large collection of algorithms for solving a particular function. So I think it should have some consequences of some type to de-randomization. And then this question is, again, all of these are sort of analogs to stuff that is interesting things that are going on in complexity theory. Can we do something in the Frege system? Like, can we come up with an algorithm that takes a tautology Tn that's harder for Frege and produces another tautology Tn prime that's much harder for Frege? And Jan has some nice results along these lines. And I think that's it. I ended early. What? Oh, sorry. If you have questions, we have lots of time.
So it seems to me that fundamentally you're asking what the relationship between proof systems and some computational models.
Yeah.
Right? So what happens if we go to the lowest, the resolution, okay, which is a very, very weak proof system? Is there an equivalent very weak computational model to we can say these two really go hand in hand?
Yeah, so there's two answers. There's no satisfying answer, I think, for any proof system, but the two answers are whatever the proof system is, the cut complexity is sort of the analogous circuit class. So in resolution, you can cut on literals, so you could think of the corresponding complexity class as just literals. But we don't know what to do with that. So the other way to think about it is to look at the search problem that underlies the formula, which is given an assignment. Typically, the search problem is something like, given the assignment, find the clause that's violated. And there, from a resolution proof, you get some kind of a special branching program that solves that search problem.
Right. So one way is to, the only thing we know how to go low bound is usually in weak models. So is there, in the resolution, we at least understand, there is some relation we understand between resolution and search.
Yeah, the search problem I'm talking about. You.
Right. So is there a clear rigorous model we can define? It's a model for solving problems we can say.
Yeah.
We can solve this if and only if.
Yeah, I think for resolution it's understood. For regular resolution, it's exactly read once branching programs.
Uh-huh.
And for resolution, it's branching programs with a special condition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Polynomial local search.
It corresponds to what?
To resolution.
In a formal sense?
Yeah. But see, the problem is you're so much higher than...
PLS is in polynomial time, if only if there's resolution, that's what you're trying to say?
No,
what is the theorem?
So it's this theorem that people were talking about yesterday that were converted into T. It's a T. It's a different search problem, actually.
Well, I think it's actually exactly the same search problem. But
is it? Certainly related.
Do you want to discuss it in question time or after the question time? Yeah, I think.
Sure, we can... Have more specific questions.
You asked about the removing this assumption about having proofs tree-like. So in some cases, it's possible to transform a deck-like proof into a tree-like.
So you can't do it here. That method doesn't work, as far as I know, because the way you do that is you carry all of the cut formulas along. You carry all the formulas along for the ride, and the problem is that you end up with more complicated formulas when you do that than just the original AC0, because you're starting off with a formula that's of higher complexity.
But you increase the depth, if you have AC0, you increase the depth only by...
No, because the original formula has these parity.
Oh, because you have these parities, so, okay.
So I don't know how to do that at all.
I mean, it probably can't be done, because you can separate Doug-like and P-like depth B.
That's right. Yeah, so the corresponding bound rhythm system, yeah. But I don't know how to, yeah. I don't know how to do the lower bound in the non-uniform model, though. The analogous.
Well, we have examples of things which have uniform Doug-like depth proofs and do not have non-uniform tree-like depth proofs. So that's as best as we can.
That's right. But I would like to get that result in the non-uniform setting.
This is a non-uniform setting.
No.
Yes.
But what are you talking about?
Well, so let's talk offline, no?
Russell?
So one observation about your third question is that I believe that if ksat is not in sub-exponential time, then it follows that there's no automatizability for resolution from results from...
That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's the interesting thing. For very weak systems where you don't have one-way functions, you can get these results under hardness results for NP. But for harder proof systems, it's very ironic. For harder proof systems, it seems much harder to not use one.
So, but maybe that's because we're using two. So somehow we want to change the definition of automizability to ask for something stronger, which is not only a strong non-automizability result would be not only can you not find proofs within the system, but you can't find any kind of certificate proof within any system
I think that's what people call weak.
Okay, yeah, negation of weak. So maybe what we want is really the negation of weak automizability.
But I don't think that's known either under...
Yeah, so I don't think that's known for under any assumption for...
Well, under one-way
function. Well, I guess under
one-way function assumption.
Right.
Can you say a bit more about this improvement we need of Smolinski's result from the half plus one divided by Pauli, which WCL sometimes that would give you this week.
You mean why I need the stronger results?
Yeah, why you need a stronger result, actually. For your argument here, it didn't really matter. It was exactly a half.
Well, it did matter, actually. So to get this that it splits in half...
But why is it so important?
Because I'm doing this n times, basically.
Yeah,
so for just one iteration, it would be fine. You could go one step with just a result of 1 half plus 1 over 1 half plus little of 1.
But for an exponential lower bound,
so I want to do this at least log times to get a super polynomial bound. And every time I do it, I need another factor of 2. So I think I need 1 in n to even get anywhere. Yeah, I mean, unless there's some way to reuse things, I don't know. And the obvious way to use the result, I don't know. But it's an interesting question whether you can use a stronger... I mean, maybe you can just use hardness period instead of worst case hardness.
What are you using about the pigeonhole principle?
Nothing. Just the fact that it doesn't have cut-free proofs. So you take anything that requires... Actually, it just has to have big tree proofs. So, and we used... I didn't mention it, but you can separate, you know, one from the other by starting with a principle like the weak pigeonhole principle, where you know at one level up it has shorter proofs than one level down. But essentially the argument is the fact that the search problem has its hands cut off and so can't deal with the formulas that it's supposed to be looking at. And I think really almost all the lower bounds except for i-pi's are of that type. I hate to be saying negative things, but
any more questions? Thanks again, Tony.